Hey, welcome back to the Corporate Survival Podcast. And this week is going to be mentoring week. And what do I mean by that? Now, I know I'm delivering a lot of value in my career program, the Corporate Survivor, to people working in 9-to-5 jobs. Because every time people join the program, I get messages like, this is so helpful. It makes a lot of sense. I wish that I had had this at the beginning of my career, or I wish I had signed up for this before I started my next job. I really like the way that you explain the corporate world. I like that you share what hiring managers are looking for. I really appreciate what managers are thinking about, you know, how a director thinks and really how to manage my boss and how to communicate better. Like everything related to the corporate world, like makes a lot of sense. And I also get messages like, oh, maybe I didn't know that I could get your direct guidance and perspective on my situation. That was super duper helpful. I'm also really thankful that I can learn from other 9-to-5 professionals and all these messages that I get, but I feel like I'm not doing a great job sharing all of this. Okay, so here's what you might not know about the program. In addition to my 3-step career growth framework, where I help you to get clear in the corporate world, get confident with corporate skills, as well as get visible personal branding, as well as a bonus course on how to get opportunities with value positioning, I also host monthly mentoring Q&A sessions where I help my program members to better navigate their latest career situation. This is basically your chance to get my direct perspective, my practical feedback, and ongoing advice as you navigate this journey of your entire career. Now I'm thinking I should really be sharing this. And that is why today I'm going to give you access to one of the mentoring calls that I host for members of my Corporate Survivor program. And I want you to experience for yourself some of the things that we talk about, the discussions that we had, and really how I help my students to identify their career problems and my perspectives, and really some suggestions on how they can move forward. So you can decide if this is helpful for your career. And just a quick reminder, when you join the Corporate Survivor today, you will get a bonus free 12 months of mentoring sessions with me. If you're ready to get started, then let's dive in. 3, 2, 1, let's go. Welcome to this month's group mentoring call with me, Mei Ping. The main program, the main lessons in the 3-step framework, as well as the 30-day job search, will give you the core foundation. So the best way to utilize the mentoring is to learn the knowledge, gain the strategies, and then make sure that you go out there and implement, then come back here and get perspectives, get feedback on the stuff that you have done. So that's really the best way that you can maximize the mentoring sessions that we have together. Okay. I want to talk about the student success story. One of the things that I feel that I'm most proud of in the Corporate Survivor is for you guys to actually take action to do a self-reflection. Now, this is the message that I got from one of the students in the program, which I feel is really, really important. So he said, just to share, I'm currently going through the 3-step framework videos and I started to do the self-reflection on my problems, issues, and blind spots, right? As highlighted in my appraisal. So to be honest, it was really tough to do the self-reflection as I need to reflect on my weaknesses as I started a few weeks ago. However, after a few weeks, I realized that the only way to improve myself is to accept my weaknesses and to find out why these happen or occur, where I can eventually apply the right solutions and perspectives in the videos to improve my way of working in a more structured way. So I'll continue to work on it and to hope to be a better myself. So I hope that these are some of the realizations that you can have also. I just want to make a note that we can learn as many strategies as we want, right? Maybe can give you the steps, maybe can give you the strategies and the framework. But the best way, right, for you to is for you to absorb it and to really be able to see how it can apply to your personal life as well. And that's kind of like how I like to see in terms of like becoming a stronger person overall. All right. So now let's get into the mentoring Q&A. So as usual, we will actually go through the 3-step framework first. So get clear, get confident, and get visible, which is the core 3-step career growth framework. That after that, we can then talk about climbing the career ladder, you know, the bonus lessons around job search, career planning, making decisions, interviews, and everything else. And we'll talk about it in the second half. So this is the foundation. So let's look at it. Now let's start with the first one. So as usual, right, the way that we are going to go about these questions is to help you also develop your critical thinking. So as I go through, right, I want you to first tell me, what do you think is this student's struggle? So let's go through this first question together. It's a little bit long, but you know, put in the chat box, what do you think like the student's like big struggle is, right? So let's look at it together. So, okay, so I've received news from my bosses that they've decided to move me to a bigger initiative with a new role. And they've already told me to start handing over my current work. So the bigger initiative is digital transformation of our products and services. Since my company is very small, so we're expected to wear many hats. So the key work that they expect me to do is to project manage the initiative, design the new experience for both internal and external users, assess and decide which systems or tech to adopt. So at the same time, the company is starting to implement KPIs and I have the opportunity to craft or negotiate my own KPIs. So since this is my first time, the company is doing this big digital transformation and also my first time, right, doing a project like this, I'm quite nervous and intimidated. So is there any way to design my KPIs in such that they are meaningfully reflect my performance and minimize the impact of external factors that I cannot control? So, for example, other contributors to the project. Okay, now this is very long. So I'm going to give everyone, right, 30 to 40 seconds. I just want you to put in the chat box, what do you think is this student's biggest struggle? Now, it's a very long story here, right? A lot of context, a lot of details. But actually, what is the problem? What do you think is actually the biggest struggle? So imagine, right, you have a team member or you have a junior team member coming to you and say, that, hey, Mei-Ping, I got all these things, la, 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 la. Okay, but actually, what is the issue? Okay, so 30 seconds for everyone. Just give it a try. So this is a way that you can practice your critical thinking. Okay, 30 seconds. What do you think this student's biggest struggle? Okay, the student seems emotional. Okay, seems clear on the work that needs to be done. Not clear on their own strengths. So alignment of performance goals with her boss. Okay. Okay, anyone else wants to try before we talk about it? Okay, so ability to break down KPIs into key milestones. Okay. I think these are actually really, really good comments. Now, let's actually break it out together. Now, I will be honest to say that when I first received this question, I actually asked myself, I'm like, okay, what is the problem? Because it seems to me, right, for the root cause problem is that the student is quite emotional about it because she used the words such as nervous and intimidated. And you may notice that she has mentioned the word new many times. This is a new project. This is a big project. This is the first time the company is doing this. This is the first time I'm doing this. Now, I think, right, these are, I would say, incorrect mindset of looking at something that's very new, in which it means that like, oh, new equals, I don't know. New means, you know, I need to restart. I don't think that's a very helpful way of thinking about it. And it also seems to me that actually, if you read here, right, her bosses have already told her what are the key KPIs for this job. Do we agree? Her bosses actually told her and actually broke it down into multiple work streams and say, hey, you need to do this, 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 and this. So it's actually already there. But I think this student's struggle is more like she feels nervous about it. And therefore, a lot of it is in the head. We haven't actually translated it out into the goals matrix yet. Okay. So in terms of like next steps, right, what I would definitely recommend is to actually go to module 4.1 and to actually start taking action. So you notice that in this whole story, right, there is no clear information on action that's been taken. But I see a lot of emotions and I see a lot of like thinking that's going on in her head. So whenever you feel overwhelmed, then this is where you need to start taking action, putting things into matrices, and then actually breaking it down step by step so you can actually identify the milestones and the things that you need to do. So it's unhelpful to think of it as a big project. How I like to think about it is more like it's just another project, right? So if let's say someone comes to you with a small task, then the first thing that you would do is that you'd be like, okay, but what do I need to do? Who do I need to talk to? And if it's something I'm not clear, I'm going to ask. So whenever you receive a new project or a bigger project, right, the foundations on clarifying what needs to be done and, you know, drilling down the milestones and breaking it down into steps and finding out who is supposed to help you and to reconfirm what needs to be done with the boss, actually that is the same. The only part that is actually stopping you from taking action is because you label the word new on it and then you label the word big. So that's why let's go back to the module 4.1. So what you're going to do, right, for this particular student is, remember at the beginning, right, her bosses actually told her all these steps, right, all these key things that she needs to achieve. So is to actually go back to the module 4.1, put it into the goals matrix. So basically, this kind of becomes your project document already. Then what you can do is then to go into module 4.2 and 4.3 to then further break it down. So it's like, okay, if I need to come up with the project outline, right, these are the things that I identify needs to be done. And who are the key stakeholders? Then once you have that information, right, 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, then you're going to sit down with your boss or your bosses, right? Maybe if it's a big project, you can do it every week or every bi-weekly to confirm what needs to be done. So this is actually the best way to make sure that you are completely aligned with the bosses on the expectation and the fact that you're actually moving in the right direction. So you can also use module 4.14 to actually send weekly progress updates to the bosses as well. So to me, it's I would approach it just like any other project, but make sure that you know you don't get intimidated just because it's something big or something new. There's this other thing that I wanted to highlight as well. So you notice that she mentioned this part around the company is starting to implement KPIs and I have the opportunity to craft and negotiate my own KPIs. Now, this one is actually kind of interesting. So I'll say this. Now, all the while, right, if you're receiving bonus and a salary increment and a performance review at the end of every year, that means that there is a KPI. Okay, so when she says the company is starting to implement KPI, can probably just means that, okay, you know what, this year the management thinks that let's formalize something. So formalizing something, the intent is still the same, just that maybe right now you kind of like have a specific document that you need to fill out. So I see it as kind of like the same thing. So I'm not sure if I agree on the comment on like, I have the opportunity to craft or negotiate my own KPIs, because it's just things that you're already doing, right? Because you can't be going to work every day but not knowing what the key goals are. So you already have the key goals, then it's just kind of like putting it into a document. And for this one, it's actually taught in module 5. So what I'm trying to say here, I think particularly for this student, is to not think about the things that you're doing or the projects that are given to you as something new, but the better way is to actually go back into the main program and see, okay, if this is not a new thing, right? So what else? It's like, have I been doing this for some time? It's just maybe the project is a different name, but it's actually the nature of the work is the same. So this is actually the best way in which you can actually go back to the main program and then to look for the lessons. Because right now, the sense I'm getting from this student is more like, oh, this thing's very new. I don't know what to do. Let's come and ask the question because I feel very stressed out. No, it's just another project, right? And therefore, I'm going to open up the 3-step framework and I'm going to go through the lessons and to find out the ones that I can then apply. So that's a much better way to think about it. Okay? Okay. Anybody else wants to drop some quick comments on this story? So this is, I think, one good example of making sure that you take action versus, you know, coming to the mentoring and then like getting some motivation for the emotional turmoil that's going in your head. So whenever you feel that, you know, there's something that you have received, right, in which you perceive is new, what will be very helpful is to actually go back to the main program, go through the list of the lessons and just say, okay, which are the lessons that will be most applicable to this, right? How can I use the KPI matrix? How can I actually break down into processes? How can I use the communication lessons to go and clarify my bosses what needs to be done? So the program itself already teaches that, but the first thing you need to go through is to move from the emotion into the action. Okay, so let's move on to the second part. So the second part is obviously get confident with corporate skills. So we actually have a kind of an interesting question here. So it's kind of a long one. So let's look at it together. And as usual, I want you to put in the chat box, right? What do you think is the student's biggest struggle? Okay, so this is a question around managing your boss's feedback. Okay, so here's the story. I was given a feedback by my manager on how to build relationships with clients in a one-on-one meetup, right, when doing a presentation. Although he liked the way I presented it, he mentioned how uncomfortable I was when meeting the client for the first time. So he gave a suggestion like, when we part ways from the client, we should make body contact such as upper arm pad, shoulder pad. He told me I need to find a signature move or a memorable moment in which I will be remembered. So my perspective, I understand his opinion, but I don't want him to make a biased judgment as I believe that I'm not doing that bad. So as an introvert, I admit that I would sometimes take several meetups, right, to build relationships. So here are my actions to see how, to see my client's perspective, right, to manage his expectations. So this student is thinking of creating some sort of like client survey forms to ask for feedback from the client, or asking the client some questions related to their jobs or some personal questions, or maybe writing out a follow-up email or summary email about the meetup. Okay, so we're going to pause here. So I'm going to give everyone 30 seconds. So what do you think is the biggest struggle? And, you know, if you're in this situation, what would you do? Okay, 30 to 40 seconds for everyone to give it a try. So what do you think is the challenge? And what would you do if you're in this student situation? It's quite tricky, right? Because you may think that you're doing okay, but somehow your boss is coming with this like feedback that, hey, you know, maybe you need to be friendlier with other people. You need to build better rapport. You need to do this and that. So it can feel a little bit awkward. Okay, so comments, put it in the chat box. Let me see. Okay, so different people have different ways of building rapport. It's a bit an unfair comment by the boss. Yep, I agree. Okay, what else? Okay, can put it in the chat box. You can send me a private DM on Zoom if you want to share your opinion, but if you're a bit shy to share with the whole group. 10 seconds left. Right, there seems to be a personality difference. The boss has a very different expectation. Yep, that sounds makes sense. Okay, anyone else? So you can keep it coming. I can see some of you saying that, not really sure what to do because it seems like a personality and a people issue. Okay, so maybe let me share some perspective with you. Now, I think, right, that it's important to see the quality of your work versus building clients a rapport as a something that's very different. However, I think it's also worthwhile identifying what kind of personality is your manager? So from based on what I'm seeing here, it sounds like for this student's manager, maybe it's a more extroverted character because his manager suggested things such as like, upper arm pad, shoulder pad. I think that's a very extrovert and maybe I think like a very male-dominated way of like handling things. And therefore the student might feel a bit uncomfortable. So maybe I can share a bit of an idea on like what I have done in the past. So in terms of like getting client survey forms asking for feedback, I wouldn't send that. The reason is because if you're doing a presentation with the client, right, they are kind of in the process of still knowing you. And a survey form sometimes, right, feels like an admin. So if like it's just like how, after our mentoring sessions, I always tell you guys, please make sure you fill up the client win form. Please make sure they share the progress update. And very few people share that. And that's because some people feel it's like an admin exercise. So I wouldn't recommend sending the survey forms. However, I think that in order to build relationship, right, I have found that people like to talk about their kids a lot. So you may want to also assess, right, the kind of clients that you are meeting. Do they look like the age group that have kids? So personally, I found that talking about when you ask people about their kids, right, they are very, very excited. And also we want to make sure that, the little chat, right, doesn't really talk about your work because it is going to be separate. So what you can do is, okay, so maybe you're nervous for the presentation, right? So first thing is to just calm down. You have already prepared. It's going to be fine. So you want to make sure that you are very, very present. So let's say, right, the client comes in, then you meet the client along the hallway, or you meet a colleague that you're not very close to. So what I like to ask is, I like to ask, oh, so how was your weekend? Did you go anywhere interesting with your family? How was your weekend? Did you do anything interesting, or did you bring your kids to anywhere interesting? So you can kind of like ask an open-ended question and then continue with a close-ended question. Now, I don't recommend asking, how are you doing? What do you think they're going to say? They're going to say, yeah, fine. And then it ends there. So if you want just to have like the extra 2 minutes, right, in which like, you guys are like walking to the meeting room, that kind of thing. So one way to find out is that, if you're someone who have kids, right, I think it kind of actually makes it a little bit easier. So I will ask it in this way of, how was your weekend? How was your weekend? Did you go anywhere? Did you go anywhere with your family? So this allows that person to then tell you whether they have kids or not. And normally people say, oh yeah, I brought my kids here. Oh yeah, we went here. Then if you want, you can ask about that. You say, oh yeah, did your kids enjoy it? And where did your kids go or something like that? So I like to ask about two questions around their kids. Then if you're someone who also have kids, then you can say, oh, I brought my boy to this. So it doesn't have to be too personal, but I find that people tend to remember if you share about kids, right, it kind of feels a little bit personal. Personally, I feel this whole shoulder tapping thing, right, is kind of awkward, and you may offend certain people who don't feel as comfortable. So you can mention that, you have kids too. So it's more like, oh yeah, young kids, they like this. Oh yeah, I have a boy, he's 4 years old right now, he's in the kindergarten and stuff like that. So people tend to remember that. And this is also a strategy that I've also used previously when I was working in banking. So I do have certain colleagues in which they love talking about their kids. So every time, I go for meetings with them, and sometimes we have to wait outside of the meeting room for just a few minutes, right? So I tend to ask them about their kids. I'm like, oh, did you like bring, your son anywhere interesting? Like, I was like, oh yeah, no kids nowadays, like, have you like watched this movie or whatever? So something very light, but basically you'll be remembered as, someone maybe who has a young kids, which is, I think, a little bit easier to remember because this whole shoulder tapping thing, I find it quite strange. Okay, so that is the beginning part of the meeting, right? But usually towards the end part of the presentation after the meeting, then I won't talk about anything that's very personal. So the other part I would agree, which is to actually send the more like a follow-up email. So, but before you send the email, so don't just keep silent. You can say after the meeting, you can say, you know, if there's anything, you can say, you know, after this meeting, I will send you a quick recap of what we have discussed. But if there's anything, you can email me, just give me a call and everything. So you want to open the door during the conversation itself. So don't wait until the end. So this is kind of like what I suggest. Okay, you can go to module 4.11 and you can go to the lesson around hosting effective meetings that drive action. So there's a clear structure. You can follow that structure. Then in terms of like 4.12, right, you can send the recaps and follow-up email. But the way that I would do it is more like even before you send that email, even during the meeting itself, you want to tell them that, you know, after this, you know, I'll send you a recap emails to summarize everything that we discussed today. Is there anything else, any other information that you need? Maybe you can let me know. I will also send it to you. So towards the end, right, it's kind of like talking about work already, right? Then if they say that they need anything, then, you know, you can, yeah, give it to them and stuff like that. But open the door as well. You can say, you know, if there's anything, you know, just give me a call. So after that, you know, remember to smile, right? And I think that's already enough, right? There's this other thing as well. So that's for the client, right? Now, the other part is actually to handle your boss, because your boss may have a very different impression of how to make friends with the client compared to you. So what you can do is that when you have a maybe monthly catch up with your boss, or the next time your boss makes this comment, just say, hey, Mei Ping, how come, you know, you didn't talk to this client, you don't have your signature move, then you're going to immediately reply and you can say that. You say, oh, actually for this client, I find that our relationship is quite good. Whenever I see them, you know, sometimes we talk about our kids a bit. I do feel we have a quite good relationship. So, you know, right now, I think everything is going well. The project is going well. The client relationship is going well. So yeah, I think it's okay. Now, it's very, very important you reply something like this so that your boss doesn't feel that you are missing something, because that thing about maybe not having this signature move may actually go into your performance review later on. So we almost want to give the boss the assurance to say, okay, actually it's going well, right? I spoke to the client and, you know, sometimes we do catch up from time to time. You know, I do give him a call from time to time. Actually, everything's okay. So this almost gives your boss a feeling of like, oh, actually there's something else that, you know, Mei Ping is doing that I might not be aware of. So this will be quite helpful. So therefore, that's why, you know, every time when you're going to talk to your boss, maybe it's monthly update or whenever your boss is asking about this client, remember to also tell your boss that I have gotten good feedback from the client. The client has been quite okay with me, and so far, you know, it's progressing well. Whatever I pitch, they're okay with it, right? Sometimes, you know, I give them a call, I send them things. So it's like giving your boss that assurance. Okay? Does it make sense? I know it's a bit more complicated because obviously, you know, there are, it's like a different dynamic, right? That's you, there's the client, and then there's your boss perception of the both situation. It's like a dynamic issue. But I think to me, I will carve it out, and I just want to make sure that I'm like, okay, the thing with the client, it still has to move, right? It's like, even if I, you know, tap the client and shake hand and all this, I'm like, why does it matter? The client is there for a purpose. The client needs information, right? And the client wants to talk to a friendly person that can give them information. That's it. So same way in which you deal with the internal stakeholder as well. So if you go for a meeting with like certain department heads or other departments that you don't really know very well, we can use the same approach as well. You know, what do you need from me? If there's anything you need, you know, just let me know. I'll get my team to send it to you. I'll send it to you personally. If there's anything, just give me a call, right? So these are the things that makes the client or your other internal stakeholder feel like, oh, maybe it's actually very helpful. So that means that whenever this person talks to your boss, their impression of you is very positive. I'm like, oh, Mei Ping, yeah, she was quite helpful. The other day, she sent me this thing. You see, right? This is the kind of comment. It's way better than like, Mei Ping, shake my hand for 5 seconds. Okay, I don't want this kind of comment. This kind of comment doesn't go for anything, okay? So just be careful. And then for your bosses, right, like I said, you know, there's the other dynamic around your boss is to actually just give your boss confirmation that you are building good relationship. Because I think from the boss's standpoint, if they see it awkward, right, then they're like, oh, yo, you know, Mei Ping cannot handle the client, then how? So that's what your boss is thinking. So therefore, you want to pump in the good feedback. Just say, hey, actually, right, the client is actually quite okay with me. I think we have a pretty good relationship. We talk from time to time. They're okay, la la. So just give your boss the validation. You don't have to do anything different, right? Because your boss is like suggesting that action based on their own behavior. That's what they know, right? But that may not work for you. Does that make sense? Okay? It's a bit more dynamic, but like, do you guys find this helpful? Just a quick one. Yep. Okay, yeah. Right. So going forward, right, particularly for this kind of people dynamic thing, you can also start observing as well. So I think in module 2, we talk about people and personality a bit. So if you want, right, in the next 30 days at your workplace, you can just observe, right, when people giving you feedback, right? Whether it's your boss or your colleagues making a comment, just know that they are coming from their own perspective. But at the end of the day, it's like, what is the goal that we're trying to achieve? Okay. So differentiate that. Of course, you know, when you get this kind of feedback, it almost feels like a huge cloud, like you need to do everything. But actually, if you were to break it down, we can still achieve the outcome in which, you know, bosses want to see that we can build good relationship with the client, want to feel like, you know, we can build rapport, because that's important for business, or, you know, important for the delivery of a project is the same thing. Okay. Cool. So this is a bit more complicated. So let's move on to phase three, which is get visible. So let's talk about this one. So, okay, so this is actually about a meeting with the big boss. So my group head from the UK is visiting, and my department head mentioned a one-on-one meeting with her. So this is my first interaction, and I'm a bit unsure about the topics to discuss. So I'm considering touching on my career goals and addressing some of the challenges we encounter in our day-to-day tasks. So would that be appropriate, or are there any specific aspects of the group head typically likes to know during such meetings? Not sure what's needed, but I'm a HR generalist in the banking sector. So as usual, let's practice our spidey sense. So what do you think this student should do? 30 seconds for everyone. What do you think this student should do? Because she's meeting the big boss, right? Okay, 30 seconds for everyone. What to talk about if you can meet the big boss? What would you talk about? Okay, so what you do? Okay, so keep the comments coming. I actually think this is kind of simple, but it's not very clear cut. So here's actually what I suggest. Now, the first thing is you want to make sure that you go into phase one. So there's a lesson around the mindset shifts at every career level. So the fact that this is the group head from the UK, right? Meaning that this is literally the big boss. So you really want to understand what would a big boss wants to hear and what would the big boss be focused on. So the career level that you want to take note of is actually the director and the C-suite level, in which they are kind of like more focused on the vision and like the bigger strategy, right? So now that we know that they want to talk about the big things, meaning that we want to make sure we can talk about your career goals and your interest in wanting to grow with the team, because obviously, you know, talent retention is an important thing. But I would not talk about some of the challenges that we encounter in our day-to-day, because that's kind of a more managerial sort of task. And the problem is that if you tell the big boss, right, problems in your day-to-day, and your manager may feel that you are like throwing them under the bus. They may feel that you are betraying them, even though you feel that, oh, the big boss is asking, let me share everything. But your manager will not feel that way. Your manager will be like, hey, how come is Mei-Ping, you know, telling about all the team's problems, right, to the big boss? Then you make your manager look bad. So that there's a difference there, because at the end of the day, for the big bosses, right, it's actually a chance for you to tell them your career goal and your desire to grow with the team. Because you must remember, who do you think is the person who is going to sign off your promotion letter and your increment? This is the person. This is the big boss who will sign off. So it's actually your chance to give a good impression. So you also want to make sure that it's something I also taught in module 2.1 in the 4x4P method, right? So person number 4 is the big boss. So this is actually where you're going to tell your big boss all the good things you have done. So how to prepare that? You can go to module 5.5. So for the performance reviews part, right? The part that you want to focus on is the key role that you're doing in this team. So it's like, okay, you know, you can say, oh yeah, you know, currently I'm a HR generalist, right? I report to, right, this person in my team. And so far I've actually been in the team for about a year already. So some of my key roles include, I'm responsible to do this, 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 and this. Then you can say, you know, so far I feel that everything is going well. It's a good opportunity for me to grow. And I feel that since I've joined the team, I have managed to adapt very quickly. So sell your good points, right? Because you want to make sure you're memorable by the big boss. That is the person going to sign off your salary increment. Make sure, you know, the face time is so important. So you can say, okay, you know, since then, you know, I've actually able to do this and this and this. Then you can say, aside from that, I feel that, you know, for this year, I also want to work towards maybe getting a promotion or continue to enhance my skills and getting involved in more projects. And that's also something that I've also recently mentioned to my manager as well. So, you know, definitely this is something that I foresee myself growing with the team. I know I'm also open to taking on new projects and stuff like that. This kind of message, please don't go and say, I think there's a problem here. There's a problem that your manager is going to come back and whack you later on, because your manager is like, hey, you just betrayed me, right? You it's like open the can of worms that you told directly to the big boss, and that is actually going to play against you. So talk about the good things, and then make sure that you are very clear around the fact that you see yourself growing the team. You can say that, you know, you look forward to take on more projects, you look forward to gain skills, or if you feel that you're ready for next level, you can even directly say, you know, currently I feel that I also want to work towards a promotion at the year end. And this is something that, you know, I've also mentioned to my manager, and it's something that I want to work towards as well. So this is something that actually other students in the Corporate Survival Program have also done by planting the seed to the big boss, right? Eventually they managed to get that promotion, or even they managed to get the salary increment, even though it was so close to the sign-off date already, they're able to turn it around because the big boss has approved. So it's kind of like that request came in at the last minute, but they still managed to impress, and therefore it still managed to go through. Does that make sense? So always remember, who is the person that you're talking to? Not whoever. Not, it's like sometimes, right, we think about the things that we want to say. So it's like, oh, whoever it is, right, I'm just going to say everything. But my request to you is to always think about who is the person you're talking to. So the more senior person, the more they want to talk about the big things. They want to make sure that, like, you can stay with the team, you can continue to grow with the team. So you notice that they like to talk about all the vision stuff. So if you talk about a lot of the problems, right, they may feel like, oh, actually this department is more problematic than I thought. Then your manager is going to get scolding. So you don't want to be the person who creates problem for the team, because later on that's how that's going to be perceived. So take it as a chance to sell yourself to the big boss. So the key goal, right, you need to get out of this meeting with the big boss is that you are memorable. You walk out, the big boss has a good impression of you. That's really, really important. Because when it comes to it, right, and this is also something I've talked about it, I think in the salary negotiation workshop, if you want, you can go and search the workshop in the mentoring module after this. So in the salary negotiation workshop, I've also talked about how when we submit names for promotions, right, to the big boss. So in the past, when I used to submit names for the big boss to sign up, we need to make sure that the big boss actually knows the people on the list. So I cannot submit the list, and then eventually the big boss said that, oh, who is this person? And let me tell you, that person's not going to get promoted. So if I want to promote someone in my team, I need to make sure that I have a campaign to make sure that my big boss knows this person. So whenever I present the name, they'll be like, oh yeah, this person, sure, I know Mei Ping, I like her, approved. Okay, so this is actually your chance for that face-to-face. Okay? Okay, are you guys okay? Please remember who you are talking to. You're not talking to your manager. This is the big, big boss. Think about this person. Is the person who's going to give you the promotion? Is the person who's going to give you your salary increment? So it's about making a good impression. It's not sharing 1,001 problems. Okay? Are we good? All right, awesome. So let's move on to the next part. So I think when we talk about like getting visible, right, there are two parts, right? First is the on the job, but this is actually on the LinkedIn part. So let's look at this one together. Okay. So I would like to build a stronger professional presence on LinkedIn this year. So I've been on LinkedIn for years, but only as a silent observer. I'm striving to be an active contributor. However, I fear the perception of others, and maybe the content of the information I share may not be informative enough. So I guess I'm just a bit hesitant due to the cancel culture, heartless comments I see on other social media platforms. So don't plan on posting anything controversial, but just the thought that people can react drastically sometimes makes me feel vulnerable. It will be interesting to hear your perspective. Okay, so I think this is actually kind of clear cut. So I'm just going to give everyone 30 seconds. Like, what do you think is the students, I guess, problem here? 30 seconds for everyone. Okay, Mei Ping, like you always say, LinkedIn is not social media. Okay, good, good. Okay, anyone else? Yep, don't need to post anything. Yep, just fix your profile. Yes, good. Okay, anyone else? Cool. So I think this is actually quite a direct thing. Now, I will say that, right, for this student, it's actually a pretty new student to the program. So as usual, right, I think that if you can see the way this question is drafted, it's more like, I haven't done anything yet, but I'm very stressed out. Okay, so it's actually kind of similar to the first question that we answered at the beginning of today's call, in which I think it's more important to actually go through the lessons first. Because if you have already gone through the lessons, you would know that I actually don't teach writing via, you know, any content on LinkedIn. In fact, there are many, many students who are able to get headhunted and actually landed new roles without posting a single thing or even commenting a single thing on LinkedIn. So you actually don't have to do that. But I think what I would recommend is that instead of like having all these like unhelpful thoughts that eventually stop you from taking action, what will be even more helpful is actually to go through the program itself. So I think because this is a new student, I would definitely recommend that if you're looking for new opportunities this year, to actually start the job search program like from week one itself. But if you're someone specifically just want to tackle LinkedIn, then you can go into module 6.1 and 6.3, which is we have more focus around building your LinkedIn profile and the engagement strategy that I teach that doesn't require writing all this nonsense content and treating LinkedIn like social media. It's not. So it's very strategic around it. And I think many students that I see in today's live session have also used the LinkedIn strategy without writing any viral content. So it definitely has worked for a lot of people. Now, if you are someone who still feels, hey, maybe I feel like I want to contribute something, I feel like I don't write content. Okay, so in module 6, right, there is a bonus lesson around should you create content on LinkedIn. So I also gave some suggestions on the kind of content that you can create as well. So you can go through that if that's what you want. However, that should not be the main strategy. So if you're someone who wants to grow a career, you want new opportunities, writing viral content on LinkedIn, right, should be the last of your priority. That's usually for someone, if they really want to build their thought leadership, I'll say director and above, that is maybe worthwhile of their time. And this is something I will tackle in next month's LinkedIn workshop as well. But I will say one thing very quickly. Do you know that a lot of people who write this kind of helpful content on LinkedIn, right, they actually have a lot of problems in their career. And maybe knows it's because they are in my DMs sending me all their problems. So don't think that you need to contribute to, you know, to add value. In fact, I think that if you're struggling with your career, then it's actually better to go back to the 3-step framework and then to focus on the things that you need to do. And if you feel that you want to make a career change, but you still feel a little bit lost, it's actually better to go through the job search program and then to focus on the LinkedIn strategy that I teach. So you need to take action for yourself first, then we try to help others. A lot of people, they try to help other people, but they are not actually helping themselves. Okay. So if you're someone who's in the job search part, then you can actually go to the job search module itself. So module 6 in the 3-step framework and the week 3 in the job search bonus lessons actually is the same thing because the LinkedIn strategy is the same. As long as you're a 9-to-5 professional, it's the same lesson. Okay. So I would say don't overthink and just go through the lessons. Okay. Now, that is the foundation. So regardless of like whatever your career situation is, I highly suggest that you nail down the 3-step framework first because we can look for new opportunities, but we still need to deliver what you're hired to do. It can't be the case of like, oh, I'll look for new opportunities. I heck care my job at work. I don't care about my boss. I'm just going to look for a new opportunity. Now, that's not a helpful way to think about it because at the end of the day, you're still taking a salary. So if you're still taking a salary from the company, it means that you still need to deliver the basic of your job. Right, then the extra time, the extra effort, then you can go and look for new opportunities. So the foundation is always going to be there. If you don't deliver your work, right, then of course you may end up getting fired, which is not good. Okay. So let's talk about the other part. So now let's talk about like, you know, climbing the career ladder and really the other parts around the plan your career in 6 steps, right? So let's have a look at this question together. So okay, so I've applied for jobs I'm interested in since starting in January 2024, applied for 6 roles and got 2 backs. So managed to get through second round interview, but didn't go well. Then I got another interview, which I thought went well. However, I'm getting anxiety. So my job search seems very slow. And for these 2 weeks, the job postings are not very interesting or a good fit. So should I start lowering my standards and apply for jobs that I think is a 75% fit or a much lower rank just to get out of my current role? Frankly speaking, nothing much is happening on that front. So if I do need to ensure I have a job in my current role, I may need to have to pick up the corporate salary 3-step framework instead of focusing on getting hired. Okay, so this is kind of interesting. So I just want to hear from everyone in the chat box. What do you think is this student's problem? What do you think is this student's challenge? 30 seconds for everyone to share. Okay, the interview outcome is quite high. Okay, yes, I that's true. Okay, the job search doesn't feel slow. It feels quite fast, right? Many interviews in just a month. Okay, yep. Okay, anyone else? It seems like she doesn't have a clarity on what she wants and where to stay to go. Okay, anyone else? Okay, very emotional. Yep. All right, everyone. Thanks for sharing. Okay. So exactly as I just said just now, right, is that regardless of whether you're searching for a job or not, you're exploring new opportunities or not, at the end of the day, we still need to deliver the baseline of our job. Whether you're happy or unhappy at your job, if you're still taking salary from the company, then to me, right, the 3-step framework is the absolute foundation. So I actually disagree with this comment around saying that, well, you know, if I want to stay at the current job, I need to continue to pick up. I need to pick up the 3-step framework instead of getting hired. I disagree. 3-step framework is the absolute foundation. Before you do anything else, you're going to make sure that you do the 3-step framework first. Okay. So that's the first thing. Now, let's talk about managing expectations because I think this is definitely something that is a bit unclear. Now, let me ask everyone, right? If you apply for 6 roles, you make 6 job applications, you got 2 interviews, right, in a period of 3 weeks. Let me ask everyone, is it good or bad? You applied for 6 jobs, you get 2 interviews out of the 6. And then it's only just within a few weeks. Because if you think about it, right, she said she started in January 2024 and this form was actually submitted before the end of January. And then if I minus all this holiday weekend, blah, 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 right, we are really only talking about 2.5 weeks, right? About maybe 20 days. So would you say it's good or bad to apply for 6 jobs and then to get 2 interviews and to be able to progress beyond the first interview? Because that's what she said, right? I managed to get to the second interview and then I did another interview, which I think I did well. Okay. So who thinks it's good? Put in a quick comment. Who thinks it's like, well, Mel, maybe can be improved or I don't know. Okay. So I'm seeing a lot of good comments here. Now, I agree because 1 in 3, if you apply and you get 1 in 3, right? Actually, it's very good. So this is a feedback around managing expectations. Do you know that today, right? Actually, I spoke to a corporate survivor student and he told me that before he joined the program, he applied for 400 applications because he wanted to move from Malaysia to Singapore. He applied for 400. He got 20 calls, not interviews. Sanity check asking him if he has the license, you know, visa to work in Singapore. That's it. He didn't get a single interview until he followed what I said. So I just want to give your perspective. And previously, you know, a few years ago, before I created Corporate Survivor, many years ago, I worked with many clients one-on-one. I worked with a client before who applied for 800 jobs. He only got 10 interviews. And the one that he managed to pass to the second round was actually a job that was recommended by his friend, but he still didn't get the job. So I want everybody to be very realistic here as to what is good. Because sometimes we think that it's like magic, right? I apply, I must be able to get every interview. Of course, if we can get that, that would be amazing. And there are some students who are able to get a very high ratio as well. Like 1 in 2 applications is like they got an interview. But I want us to be very realistic here that, you know, what is good and what is considered like reasonable. Because if you're doing something for less than a month and then we're already giving up, and we say that, oh, it's very slow, I'm not seeing anything, I need to downgrade everything, then I truly question whether, like, is there an issue around the clarity of what you want? Or it's just you're still emotionally unstable that maybe you need to work around your mindset first before you start applying for a job, okay? So here's what I suggest. So as usual, right, I think it's maybe helpful to actually go back to the week 1 in the job search program to actually focus on the career interest and direction. Because one of the things you notice she said here is that she said, should I lower my standards and apply for a job with only less than 75% fit? Now, this comment tells me that this student is looking for a job that's almost 100% fit, which does not exist. So if you go through week 1, you'll know that the way that I teach is more like we look at the 70-30 method. So as long as it's 70% fit, right, most of the time, the other 30%, if you're willing to learn, then we will go for it. So that this specific comment tells me that you're maybe looking for something that's like almost exact 1-to-1, right? And that's why it's like, it feels very slow. I can't get anything that's interesting fit and everything else. Now, the question around, should I take a much lower rank so to get out of my current role? I don't think this is a question I can answer for you. At the end of the day, there are many factors. And it sounds to me that there's like no clear conviction on what do you want. So you may want to actually go back and like rethink as to, you know, what is a realistic timeline? What is a good like application ratio to be able to get the interview and to work out from there, right? So what I would suggest instead to refocus your attention is actually to go and improve on your interview skills. Because to me, the fact that you're able to get 1 in 3 applications, right? Meaning that your resume is working. So this is kind of a good confirmation that your resume is working. But what you may need to improve on is your interview skills. Because I know that for this student, she has been with a current company for a very long time. So I would say that instead of like worrying about should I downgrade and everything else, how about improving your interview skills? And then, like I said, you may also want to go through some of the bonus mindset masterclasses if you feel that you're being pulled in every direction. Or if you haven't used your bonus call, with one-on-one call with me, you can do that. But I do agree with many students in the chat box in which it seems like there's no clarity and then there's an unclear expectation on like actually what's good. I think if you ask a lot of people out there, you know, 1 in 3 applications, you get an interview, I think that's very good. Okay, so I just want us to remember that it is not like magic, right? So it's something that you continue to improve on. So in the past, if you're someone who has been applying for jobs, you can't get a single interview and now you're getting interviews, that's a win. And then for someone, maybe in the past, right, you can't even pass to the second round of interview. Now you start getting the second round of interview. To me, that's a win too, right? Or in the past, you know, you'll be getting a lot of interviews, but you somehow cannot get an offer. Now you're getting offers, but it's not the number that you want. To me, that's a big win too, because it's the progress. Okay, so let's move on. So let's look at this together. So this is a student who went for a couple of interviews recently. So this is a question around, okay, so why do you want to join this specific company? So he said, this question was asked in addition to the question, why do you want to join this role? So I had used the career vision answer to this question. So how I've prepared for this question is to talk about the company's career progression and their training structure. But this is more applicable to huge companies where the ladder is clear and their training provided is extensive. So how do I prepare for this question for smaller and more niche companies? Or do you have any other recommendations regardless of company size? Okay, this is actually really interesting because when you go for the interview, they're going to ask you, so why do you want this job? Why do you want to join specifically our company? Actually, it's kind of a common question. So I'm going to give everyone 30 seconds here. What do you think the student, what mistake do you think the student make when answering this question? 30 seconds for everyone. Okay. It's all about me, me, me. I don't really know what's wrong with the answer. Okay. Okay. Very focused on the type of company. Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Anyone else wants to try? 10 seconds left. So for the student who said, right, it's all about me, 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 you are correct. That's exactly the problem with this answer. I think, right, this student started off well. Because he said, right, you know, why do you want to join this company? Then he said, okay, my vision is to, you know, grow in this role, which is actually what Meiping teaches. So, right? So the stumbling block comes, right, in which he actually get another question, which is actually a similar question to the first question. But he panicked and then he answered something completely different. So that's actually the problem. So you notice that he started talking about the company's career progression and the training structure. But let me ask you this, how do you know about their progression and training structure? Because you are now guessing. And let me tell you this, right? You know, when companies hire, right, they are hiring for the current position. So in the past, when I interviewed people, right, I don't always hire the person who talk about the progression because I'm like, what if I can't promote you for 2 years and I need you to do, maybe I can increase your salary, but I may not have the next level position for you. And I want someone who wants to do the work now, not thinking about all these things that the company can give, which may be possible, but may not be immediate. So when you answer like this, right, it may give an impression to the hiring managers like, oh, you come here, right? It's like within a few months, you want a promotion. Maybe you want to do the next thing, which the company may not have that because there's a reason why they're opening the position for this level, right? So you need to focus on the fact that you can deliver per the JD. So the trick to this, right, actually, when they say why you want to join this company, which means that it's actually about the JD. It's like, oh, because looking through at the JD that, you know, based on my understanding and looking through the JD, right, this role requires me to do this and this and this. Actually, all these things are areas that I have experience in. For example, when I was in this position, I was responsible to do this and that position, I was have successfully do this and this and this. And that's actually the reason why I was actually very interested in this role that your company has posted. And I believe that I can actually do a good job because I have all these experiences in the past. And if I'm given the opportunity to join your team, then I definitely you know, see my career growing with you and your team and your company, something like this. Okay. Because you see, right, when you talk about all this, like company's career progression, training structure, you are still guessing because they haven't said it, right? So, and it also looks like, it's like you sell yourself, like I have a lot of value to add. And then you come in, you tell them that, oh, the reason I want to join a company is because your company is going to train me. You see the message is totally opposite. You're saying that, hey, I can do it already. Then they ask you why you want to join. They're like, oh, but all these things you can teach me. You can see it's like not the same message. You get what I'm saying? It's like, I can do it versus, hey, you're not supposed to train me. Very different message. So that's why, right, the hiring manager may be really competent. They're like, are you as competent as you say? Because like, you're talking about all this like training, but you literally just told me 2 minutes ago that you can do the thing. Not balanced. Okay? So that's why, right, I don't think the question is really around like how do you prepare for the smaller or more niche companies? Because if you see the way this question is drafted by this student, right, he thinks that the difference is in the company size. And I tell you now, the answer is the problem is not the company size, right? The problem is what you can do for this role. And regardless of the company size, every company has a JD. You are applying based on the JD. So if they ask you, why do you want to join this role? Basically, it's actually a more specific question. Which is now you need to give a more specific answer to say, because I saw in your JD, I can do it. That is the answer, regardless of company size. So if you apply for a bigger company, then it's the same answer. If you apply for a smaller company, you just say I can do it. And for all these areas, you know, we can say for some of these areas, I have also have had exposure as well. Like in my previous role, I've also spoken to this team. So I have a very good understanding of like how the product team works and everything. And this is definitely an area that I'm very confident that I can add value. And that's why I applied for this job. That's the answer. So this is actually an answer that's like regardless of company size, it doesn't matter because you are matching it against the JD. So it's a very precise answer. Okay? Okay. So it's not about this progression and stuff like that. Because when you talk about that, then it's about what the company can give you. But remember what I told you about interviews? It's about what you can give the company, what you can do for the company, right? So if you go through the week four of the job search lessons, right? In week four, I also talked about the intention of the question. So if you remember in the lesson, I talked about what do you think the hiring manager wants to hire for? They are looking for someone who is competent. They're looking for someone who like can collaborate with other people. They're looking for someone who is confident. So when you answer this, right, when you talk about all the training, right, you ask yourself, right, do you sound like a person who is competent if you're telling them that the reason I want to join is because you are going to train me? Do you think you have tackled the competence box? I don't think so, right? It also doesn't tackle the confidence box because it's like, oh, it's like, if you can't do anything, then it's like a lot of question mark. But usually if you cannot tick the competent box, right, it's really no go, generally speaking. Okay. So you want to really focus on the intention of the question. It's always about competence. Competence is like 80% of the hiring decision. Okay. So regardless of the question, don't panic. Don't go and talk about what the company can give me. It's about what you can do. Okay. So therefore, if you want to like focus on a little bit more, you can actually go to the module 4.4. So there's a lesson around communication skills where I talked about the message and your interpretation of the message. I think for this situation, it's probably the student panicked a little bit. And that's why he thought, oh, maybe it's a different question. I need to answer. I need to give a totally different answer. But I see it as like, it's just a more detailed answer compared to the earlier question. So it's like, why do you want to join this? Why do you apply for this job versus, you know, why you want to join this company? To me, it's actually the same question. It's like, we need to sell more conviction, not go talk about something else. Okay. So the other thing that the other lesson I think is quite worthwhile to go through is that you can go through the job search workshop in the mentoring module. So I think that was in October 2023. So there's a lesson I talked about you versus the hiring manager. And I said that a big portion of that, they're hiring for competence. So make sure that you focus on that. Never forget, the answer needs to focus on competence. So if you look at this, right, you notice that he's not focusing on competence. In fact, he looks incompetent when you answer this way. Okay, I'll pause here. Does it make sense? Can you guys see it? You guys okay? So remember, for all of you guys like looking for opportunities, right? Always remember, like, it's about the competence. Okay? Okay. So let's look at this last question together. Then we can do a recap. Okay? So I revisited the job search course and refreshed my LinkedIn and CV. As a result, I got interviewed by a managerial equivalent position and recently headhunted with a six-figure salary. So based on my research, my skills and experience will earn me a salary expectation of 91K to 117K. So my question is that if a job posting includes a salary range beyond my expectation, so which is 125K midpoint, during the initial screening, they ask about my salary expectation. Should I be honest or to adjust to match theirs? Okay, I'll answer this one directly. First comment, right, is that even though you have done your research, I would not recommend all these like funny numbers. Like try to put in a round number, either end with a 0 or a 5. So if you're going to say 91 to 117, I would say that probably 90, or you can say 95 to 125. The 5, right, or 0 is actually a lot easier for them to catch. If you see all these random numbers, right, they'll be so fixated and say, why is it 117? Why is it not 116? This is actually, it's not going to help your case to negotiate. So a round number is actually easier because a lot of the budgets are in round number. So better to adjust it, right? Maybe you can say 95 to 125. Now, specific to the question, right? If let's say, right, the job posting says, okay, it's 125. To me, right, it doesn't mean that you need to exactly match that. But I will say that if let's say, right, based on your research, it's already quite close, I may actually expand the range a bit. So instead of like I said, 91 to 117, we may say, you know, 95 to 125. Now, it doesn't mean, right, that if you don't expect as high as what they are publishing, they're not going to hire you. It's not true. Sometimes it's an advantage. They may hire you because they know that like, oh, even if they are able to give you what you want, there may be some space for you to get the salary increment in the next, you know, 1 year or so. So they know that you go in, they have more money to pay you as the years go by. So it's actually a good thing. But as I said, you know, if it's fairly close, you can, you know, just stretch it out, make the range a bit bigger. But it actually down to your interview as well. So when you go for the interview and they may actually go into a little bit more detail, then you can try to justify. But even during the interviews, I may not necessarily press for 125. So you may still use the range of, like, you know, I'm looking at between 95 to 125, but I'm definitely open to look at it as the entire package as a whole, and, you know, to consider beyond just the base salary and also look at all the benefits as a whole. So this is something that is possible. So I would expand the range. I'll give you one example. Last year, there was a corporate survivor student, right? She was severely underpaid. So what happened was that she was only making around 6,300 and her total package was around 110. So when she applied for this job, it was a managerial job. And the reason why she was underpaid is because she's been in the same company for 10 years. So that's why she was underpaid. So what happened was that she applied for this job that was, they published the median point, right, as 12,000. So at that time, her base salary was only about 6,000 plus. So 6,000 plus to 12,000 is like a big number, right? It's almost double, right? So she came to me, she asked me, oh, maybe what should I do? So what I told her is that, okay, we're going to wrap up into the total package. So you can go through the salary negotiation workshop if you want a refresher. But eventually the number that was given to her was around 10,005. I would say more than five figures, a bit further away from the 12K that was published, but she still got the job. And now she's really started, it's been 6 months already, and she's actually doing really well. And now she's able to get an increment. Do you know why she's able to get an increment? Because she hasn't reached the middle point. So therefore, her pay can still continue to increase even without getting a promotion. And this may be a good thing in which you don't feel the pressure to get that promotion the next year, even you're able to get the job. But it means that your pay can still continue to move up within the same band. Okay, so I don't see this as something negative, but I will just make it a bit easier for the company to process your requirements. So to process what you want, in which just to do a roundup. And as long as, you know, they're able to give you something that is around the number that you want, I may consider taking the role first. But knowing that the fact that, you know, your salary can still move towards the midpoint, meaning that, you know, in this role, you can still have a motivation for your pay to increase, you know, maybe every 6 months or every 12 months. So I would see that in a more big picture point of view. Okay. So in terms of like what I recommend for you to do, again, you can go to the interview skills, right, for the intention of the question. But I think what would be quite helpful is to also go to like phase one. So if you're headhunted, right, for a manager equivalent position, and right now you're on the juniors, you're more junior. So you want to also take note of like what would a manager's responsibility be? Because some of the questions you may also need to explain to the hiring manager to say that, oh, you know, you have a confidence to guide other people in terms of the work. You have the confidence to, you have a, you know how to, you know, build step-by-step processes. You can manage multiple stakeholders, which is kind of closer to a manager's work. So it's just something to take note of. If let's say you're applying for a role, you're headhunted for a role that's one rank higher than yours. Okay. So it's just something to take note of. And again, for the salary negotiation workshop, I think it's one that's also worthwhile to just go through to make sure that you are very clear on the numbers that you are giving as well. Because in there, I think there's a matrix in which I teach you how to calculate and how to, you know, ask for more money and stuff like that. So round number is always better. Either five or zero is always the best. Okay. So at the end of the day, right, it's down to the three-step framework. We just want to make sure that you are doing this right. So regardless of whether you're looking for opportunity or not, you will just want to make sure that like you are still delivering at your job. You don't have to deliver anything new, but you need to be able to deliver the baseline. Because my opinion is more like the current company that's hiring you doesn't owe you anything. That shouldn't, you know, is in no obligation to give you time to go and look for the next job in which you're going to quit already. So that's a decision that you're making for yourself. And therefore, if you feel that's important enough, right, then you need to allocate yourself time to upskill, to learn how to sell your value. All these things are taught in the program. And then move forward. At the end of the day, it's like, no one owes you that future career. If you want it enough, then we're going to allocate time, we're going to prioritize, and we're going to do it. Okay? Just a very quick recap. What is your biggest takeaway from today's session? Okay, communication is very important. Yep. Clarity, yes. Okay, interview is a skill. Biggest takeaway, know your weaknesses and strengths to be able to speak up about your value to your manager. Yep, yep, yep. Okay, anyone else? Okay, need to understand what the big boss is looking for. Yes. Exactly. So that's something that sometimes like we are very fixated on saying what we want to say, but sometimes like it's like what the other person is hearing, right? It's also very important because if you don't take note of like the other person's career level and their experiences and what they want to hear, eventually we may feel that we are speaking up, but the other party is like not able to understand what you're saying, right? Because of the difference in level and the difference in expectation and everything else. So that's why the communication lessons definitely come in. And you notice that the way I teach, we always focus on the intention, because once you can master the intention, then you can feel more comfortable to communicate in the way that will be most comfortable for you. So focus on the progress instead of the final destination. Celebrate the small wins. Yep, yep, yep. Okay, cool, right? So if you notice that even for today's call, the best feedback and the best things are things that if you've already done, then I can sort of like better assess the situation and also tell you like what you're missing out on. And I think that's kind of like the best way that you can learn how to navigate the corporate world. Yes? Okay, so with that, all the best. See you.